Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast, live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
Right before service, I went out in the parking lot, and there was this guy standing out there, and he was like looking in through the doorway, just staring, and I said, "Hey, man, come on in." And he said, "What is this?" And I said, "It's a church," which it says on the sign, and I said, "It's a church." And he went, "It's really a church?" And I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Why is there music coming out of it that I've heard before?" It's kind of funny. Today we are continuing the series, I Want a Movie Life, and we're going to be looking at The Amazing Spider-Man. We're doing this kind of superhero edition, and I have a confession to make. I am not much of a superhero guy. I may look like a superhero guy, but I am not much of a superhero guy. I've never bought a superhero comic book, never watched a superhero cartoon on TV. I see some of the big movies, but not a big superhero guy. So I don't know, like, the backstory behind the superheroes. You know, how do they become? I don't know. And there's some that I wonder about, like Aquaman. Was he like the secret love child of Superman and a female rainbow trout? I don't know. Was Wonder Woman an ex-Victoria's Secret model? I don't know. The Flash, maybe he was just some dude walking around in a trench coat. I don't know. But that's kind of the interesting thing about Spider-Man is even someone who's not kind of a superhero geek, you still kind of know the story of how Spider-Man became Spider-Man. And if you saw the movie, what was interesting to me is as we see Spider-Man, not Spider-Man, and then he kind of evolves, he transforms into Spider-Man over time. What was interesting is I thought there were so many parallels between that transformation and the transformation a person has when they go from not being a Christian to being a new Christian and kind of growing as a Christian. I realize if you saw the movie, that's not what you were thinking. You weren't like, fascinating parallels, right? You weren't thinking that, but I'm weird, and that's what I was thinking. And so tonight, I want to kind of show you some of those parallels of Spider-Man as he goes from being an ordinary person to being a superhero, and a person who maybe goes from not being a Christian to being a Christian to being really, we could really say, kind of a superhero for God, because really that's what God intends for us to be. That's our destiny. So at the beginning of the movie, Spider-Man is not Spider-Man. He's just Peter Parker. He's a kid in high school. He's a kid who's kind of a nerd. He gets pushed away around in the hallways by the bullies at school. And watching it, you're kind of like, this is what his life is going to be forever. You just know this is who he is. This is what his life is going to be like. And I don't know, but maybe you resonate a little bit with that. Not that you're a nerd. I'm not saying that. You decide if you're a nerd. I don't know. But maybe you feel a little bit pushed around the hallways of life. What I mean is, let me say, I'm not saying that you don't have some good times. I'm sure you do. I'm not saying you don't have some good friends. You probably do. You probably have some good causes that you believe in. But even still, maybe you feel a little bit aimless. Maybe in life you feel a little bit purposeless, or maybe you feel like you don't have the power that you need to have to make the changes in your life or in the world that you really would like to make. Maybe not, but I can say that was me. At the point in my life where I was not a Christian, man, I had some good times, I had good friends, I got good grades, I knew I was going to make a lot of money someday, but even still, if you had asked me to be honest, I would have said, man, my life just, it doesn't have a lot of direction. I don't have the power to make the change in my life that I want to, and I look around at the world, and it's not the way I think it should be, but what can I do about it? I don't have the power to make a difference. And so that was me. So Peter Parker, that's him. And then this one day he goes to a science lab. And in this lab, they're doing experiments with spiders. And what they're doing is trying to enhance the spider's physical abilities. Basically, they're trying to, through DNA management, they're trying to make super spiders. But one of the spiders gets out and it bites Peter Parker. And he realizes, like, something weird is happening inside of me. And what's happening is that the spider's DNA and his DNA are kind of like, you know, combining. And he gets the super strength, the super abilities of the spider. And so he starts to understand, I now have super strength, super jumping ability, super speed. And so he's got some new abilities. And he's also like a really smart kid. And he develops this apparatus that he's able to hook to his wrist that shoot spider webs out of his wrists. And it's kind of interesting because once he's bit, Peter Parker is every bit as much Spider-Man as he'll ever be. He has all the powers that he's going to have. He has all the abilities. But at this point, he has no idea how to use them. It's just completely an awkward thing. We see him start to try to use these powers a little bit, and he's like, I don't know what to do with these things. Like it's just frustrating and awkward for him. And I can say for me, so this was my life. And then there was this day where I was bit. I heard about Jesus for the first time. I hadn't grown up going to church, didn't have any Christian friends, didn't know anything about Christianity or Jesus, but I was curious. When I heard this, it was like, And so I decided it was worth checking out. And so I spent months studying the life of Jesus and trying to figure out, is this true or not? And eventually, I decided, man, this is true. It really happened. Jesus really was this person based on evidence. And he was amazing, and I wanted to follow him. And so in that moment, I decided I'm going to spend the rest of my life giving my life to God, following Jesus. I'm giving him leadership in my life. And so I put my faith in Jesus. I was baptized. Baptism is a little ceremony a person goes through. It's almost kind of like a wedding ceremony where you're starting a new relationship with God. It's not like a last step in a process. It's like the first step in the process where you're lowered underwater, raised out of the water, and the idea is like you're starting this new life, and God's going to be the focus of your life and your strength in life. And so I did that. And on that day, I was every bit as much a Christian as I am now, 22 years later, or I'll ever be. And I had all the gifts, all the abilities, all that would make me a Christian. I had it all that day. But I had no idea how to use it. I had just an awkwardness, and it was almost frustrating for me to try to figure out how to live a Christian life because I did not know. This is a really important distinction that I think a lot of people miss. And so I actually want to kind of draw it out for you because I think it's really critical that that you get this. So I'm going to draw it out, and I have to warn you, I'm not the world's greatest drawer. On this graph on the left side, it says 0 to 100%, and then going across the bottom, it says time. So that's kind of the timeline of a person's life. And so you have this person, and we're going to represent this person with these lines. And so this red line, we're going to call this percent Christian. And what happens in a person's life is that they're kind of going along at 0%. And then if they have a day where they say yes to God's invitation to relationship, they say, yes, I want to put my faith in Jesus. I want to give my life to God. What happens is in that day, in that moment, they go from 0 to 100% and they stay there. Okay? And so on that day, they're as Christian as they'll ever be, as much of a Christ as they'll ever be. But at the same time, this person probably doesn't have a whole lot of understanding about what does it really look like for me to live the Christian life? And how do I respond to things in a way that Jesus would respond to things? And their character maybe isn't developed. It's not very much like Jesus yet. And they've been given some strengths and abilities, some gifts, but they don't know how to use those to really serve people and change the world the way Jesus did. And so we'll call this second line, this blue line, percent Christ-like. Okay, so this person who's like, you know, what percent are you actually living the kind of life Jesus did, thinking the way he did, reacting to things the way he did, serving the world the way he did? And this line would look more like this. It kind of goes gradually and just little by little over time that you grow into understanding and thinking right and acting right and having that kind of character and serving the world in a way that really makes a difference. And so it's an important distinction because people get really frustrated when they confuse these two lines. You know, some people become a Christian and they're like, I don't get it. Why aren't I able to live the way I'm supposed to live, the way I hear about in the sermons? And well, it's because you're not supposed to be. That happens gradually, little by little. And then there's other people who get confused and they're like, you know, are you a Christian? Well, I don't know. I haven't had a very good week. You know, like it's like, no, you're 100% or you're 0%. And so does that kind of make sense? And so like for me, I had this day where I made this decision. All right, so now I'm 100% a Christian. But again, I had no idea how to actually live this out. One kind of funny example is I started going to church. First time in my life I went to church was after I became a Christian. And so I go to this church, and I walk in, and I'm 20 years old, but everybody in the church, all the adults in the church, are somewhere between like 40 and 140. Most of them much closer to 140 than 40. And so I looked around, I was like, oh boy, there's nobody I can relate to in this church. The closest people to me in age were actually the high schoolers, the youth group. And so I started hanging out with them a little bit. Like every Tuesday night, they went to a soup kitchen and they fed homeless people. And I was like, can I come? And they're like, sure. And so every Tuesday night, I went with them and just did some things like that. And so after a few months of that, the pastor's daughter, 10th grader, came up to me and she's like, Vince? And I said, yeah. And she said, you really need to stop cursing around us. And I was like, excuse me? And she goes, we like you hanging out with us, but you really need to stop cursing all the time. And I was like, I do? And she was like, yes. I had no idea. And so I was like, I'm really sorry. I will totally stop hanging out with you guys. She's like, no. We want you to hang out with us. Just please stop cursing around us. And I was like, okay, I didn't know. I just had no idea how to actually live the kind of life that Jesus would have me live. But at the same time, 100% Christian. Okay, so you see that difference. Well, think about this. So Peter Parker gets all these abilities, right? He has all the abilities to be Spider-Man, but he's awkward with them. He's experimenting with them. It's frustrating. What if Peter Parker just kind of sat down and said, forget it, man. I mean, I got all these abilities. I can't do it. I tried. It's awkward. It's frustrating. I'm just not going to use them. You know what would have happened? The world would have missed out on a superhero. Right? Like, he would have no idea. Because at that point, he's Peter Parker. I got some new abilities. He doesn't know what he's going to become. But we do. Ultimately, he's going to become Spider-Man. He's going to fight crime and fight evil and save people and save the world. Right? And so if he quit because it was frustrating, the world misses out on Spider-Man. And I want to tell you this. If you're maybe somebody who has not yet made that decision to become a Christian, and maybe the reason is you look at what you know, you think it means to be a Christian, you're like, I could never live like that. I don't have that in me. I know me. I can't stop doing it. I just can't do it. Or maybe you have become a Christian, maybe just recently, maybe here at Verve, you made that decision and you said, yes, I'm going to do this, and you became a Christian, and now it's like, this is awkward. This is frustrating. Like, there's just things about it, like praying. I don't know how to pray, and like there's certain ways I guess I'm supposed to live that I've just never lived that way. It's really different. I don't know if that's you, I just want to tell you, it's supposed to be that way. It's normal, right? The graph, you go 100% Christian, but growing into that takes time. It happens little by little, and don't quit. Don't quit on the process, because the world needs you. See, you don't know this yet, but you're actually going to be a superhero. At this point, you think, oh, I'm this person. I've said yes to God. I've got some new things going on in my life. But no, God's destiny for your life is for you to do great and glorious things for him. He is going to use your life to turn this world upside down. He really will. But you can't quit on the process. It takes time. It happens little by little. Okay, so with Spider-Man, he goes from being Peter Parker, he's not Spider-Man at all, he's bit, and now all of a sudden he has this awkward, frustrating phase where it's like, I have these new things, but I don't know what to do with them, and then something starts to happen. He starts to be able to use his abilities. He experiments enough that he's like, oh, and so he starts using his abilities, but if you saw the movie, you remember what he used them for was he just started taking joy rides through the skyscrapers. Like, for no reason, he would just be like, I'm going to go out flying. I can fly. And choo, 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 you know, he's like, choo, choo, flying through the sky. And he goes back and he beats up some of the bullies who have been beating him up. And he starts hunting down the killer of his uncle. And so do you see this kind of phase in the evolution of Spider-Man? In this phase, he's starting to use his abilities, the gifts he's been given, but he's using them all for selfish reasons. It's just for him. And this is a very similar phase to what happens in the evolution, the transformation of a Christian. That what happens is, as we start living this life, you start going, oh, there's some things I've been given. There is peace and there is joy that a Christian has that you've never had before. And you go, I react to things different now. I have a different perspective now. I like this. This makes me feel better about my life in the world. And so you just kind of enjoy it. And there's wisdom. Like you start looking at the Bible and you're like, man, this thing makes sense. And there's wisdom that helps me make good decisions and live life better. And so you start using it and your life gets better. And you're like, I like this. And so there are some kind of gifts that God gives everybody. Every Christian gets peace and joy and wisdom and things like that. But there are also some gifts that you get individually, almost like kind of custom given to you from God. The Bible talks about this a lot, and I'll show you a verse or two. So if you have a Bible, open to 1 Peter chapter 4. If you have a Bible with you, if you don't have a Bible, that's okay. We put the verses on the screen for you, so you'll be fine. If you don't own a Bible, we would love to give you one as a free gift. We give them out every week at the Velcro bar in the back, which is kind of our connecting place, so grab a Bible on your way out. So 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 10 says this. We'll put it on the screen for you. It says, each one should use whatever gift he has received to serve others, faithfully administering God's grace, it's kind of like God's gifts, in its various forms. So the idea is, and there's some gifts that God doesn't give everybody the same gift. He gives different people different gifts. There's another place, 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 7, the Bible put it on the screen. It says, each man has his own gift from God. One has this gift, another has that. And there's places in the Bible where it talks about what are those gifts. And so when you hear them, you're like, well, they're not weird things. They're things that people have. But the idea is that God has placed those in your life, and he comes in with his supernatural power, and he allows you to use those gifts to serve the world in a way that you make a huge difference in the world. So like the Bible talks about the gift of leadership. Some people have the gift and the ability to lead other people. And there's the gift, it talks about, of administration. Some people are just really good at administering a program or things like that. It talks about the gift of mercy. Some people are just really good at being compassionate and showing that to other people. There's a gift that talks about of encouragement. Some people are really good at encouraging others. There's a gift of generosity, the idea that God gave some people the ability to make lots of money so they could be generous with it and give to their church and people in need. And so there's these gifts that God gives us, not just the ones that everybody gets, like peace and joy, but there's gifts that you might have the gift of leadership. You might have the gift of teaching. You might have the gift of mercy. And so God gives us these gifts, and the idea is that we're given these gifts to give to others. In that passage we looked at, it says, use the gifts to serve others. And so it's like God gave you peace and joy, and you're supposed to use it to share peace and joy with other people. God gave you wisdom for everyday life in the Bible. Share that with other people. God gave you the gift of making money or of teaching. Use that with other people. Serve other people through those gifts. But what happens for a lot of people, it's like, I wasn't a Christian. Now I'm a new Christian. It's awkward. It's frustrating. And now I'm starting to go, oh, there's some things here for me, but we use them in selfish ways instead of using them to serve other people. It's kind of a phase a lot of people go through. For me, when I became a Christian, it was a surprise to me, but it became quickly obvious to me that I had talking gifts. Like, I would talk to people, I would read things in the Bible, and I would talk to people, and they'd be like, so you're a new Christian, because you explain that better than I've ever understood it. And I was just able to make things like clear for people and explain things and kind of get people excited about things. They're like, yeah. And I was like, oh, like I have, like God's given me some abilities to talk to people. And from like almost day one of me being a Christian, I'm like, I'm supposed to use that for God. But instead, I went to law school. Now, there's nothing wrong with going to law school and being a lawyer. Yeah, insert your own joke. Maybe there's something wrong with being a lawyer. You decide. But I would say there's nothing wrong with being a lawyer if you use that to make this world a better place. But there was something wrong with me going to law school and planning on being a lawyer, because I knew that's not what I was supposed to do. I knew that God gave me those gifts to serve him and to serve others, not to make money off of them. And so I was in the wrong place. And something happened at the end of my first year of law school. My home church, the church, it was back in Buffalo, New York. I was going to law school in University of Illinois. My home church in Buffalo asked me if I would preach a sermon that summer. And I was like, really? And they're like, yeah. And I was like, I think that's weird because you do know I was the one cursing with the youth group. Like, you sure? Me? Really? And they're like, yeah. And I was like, all right. And I had kind of put cursing behind me. And so I was like, I think I won't curse if I preach, but I don't have any idea how to give a sermon. And but I said, all right. And so I went up there and I didn't know what I was doing. So I just talked like I talk. And I didn't use the preacher voice I was probably supposed to use or whatever. And so I just went up there and talked. And I thought it was awful. But people were like, it was pretty good. Like I think you're good at this. You have a gift at this. And that was one of the things. There was a lot. But that was one of the things that led me to go, all right, I'm going to do this. And I transferred from law school to Bible seminary, which was interesting. Like in seminary, I took a class on preaching. Didn't enjoy it. Didn't get a lot out of it. But it was interesting. So like our class had, I think, about 24 people in it. And of the 24 people, 22 were kind of like me, like, young 20s, just starting out, moving towards ministry or whatever. There were two guys in the class that were older, though. One of them was this, like, really strange, like, burnt-out hippie. Like, you just knew. Like, he was just, like, okay, like, way burnt-out hippie guy. And then the other guy, he was older, and he was an African-American pastor. He was the only African-American person in this class and almost in the entire seminary, sadly. But he was the pastor of this big, huge church of thousands of people in Cincinnati, and he was getting his PhD in this program. Everybody else was kind of like starting out, getting their master's degree, whatever. And so in this class, what you would do is you would preach a sermon every week. So everybody had their turn. It's like my day to preach to the class. And you'd come in, you'd preach for 30 minutes, and then the last 30 minutes, you'd get critiqued. And it was harsh. Like, you'd get done with your sermon, and immediately, like, people start, like, raising their hands and going, your exegesis of the passage was lacking in that blah, blah, blah. And your application, whatever, whatever. And lots of stuff about exegesis. I think your exegesis of this passage didn't mention it, whatever. And so I was just kind of like, whoa, these people just kind of, like, jump in and tear you up. So, finally, in the semester, my turn came to preach a sermon. It just so happened that my girlfriend, whose name was Jen, and who is now my wife, who lived in Buffalo, was visiting me. She was staying with some of my friends, but she was visiting for a few days, and so I'm like, you're here the day where I'm preaching my sermon in the class. And she's like, can I come? And I was like, I guess. And so she came, sat in the back, and walking into the class, I'm like, I have to warn you, this is going to be bad. Because these people, they know what they're doing. They grew up in church. Like, they've been around this. I don't have a clue. I'm just going to go up there and talk. Like I talk. They give me a passage I'm supposed to do. I'm just going to go up and talk about it. They're going to rip me up and talk about my exegesis. I don't know what that word means. I didn't. And I'm like, you're going to be embarrassed. I'm sorry. So I went up, and I preached my sermon for my 30 minutes. And when it got done, I was like, here we go, because I'm going to get critiqued like crazy. And it was really odd. There was just silence for like at least a minute, just really quiet. And I start having thoughts going through my head, like thoughts like, oh, my goodness, how bad was it? And thoughts like, go ahead and tell me what you think. I don't need your approval. And thoughts like, I will burn this seminary to the ground. So just these thoughts, you know. And finally, the silence is broken by the African-American pastor who speaks up and says, it's about time we got some black preaching in this school. And I went, and he said, this is what I'm talking about, a white man with some soul. And I'm like, and then the old hippie dude, the burnout hippie guy, raises his hand, the president says, yes, and he goes, keep the devil off your back, man. Keep the devil off your back. And I was like, and that was it. Nobody else said anything. I'm like, what about my exegesis? What does it mean? And so Jen and I walked out of the class, and she said, was that normal? And I was like, no, that was really weird. And she goes, why did that guy think you were a black preacher? And I said, I don't have any idea. And she said, why did that like weird guy tell you to keep the devil off your back? And I said, I had no idea, but I think I saw him smoking some peyote before class. That might explain it. But it was really weird. But it was one of the moments in my life where I went, I think maybe God gave me some gifts. He promised them to everybody, so I assume I probably should have already figured out he would have given me some, but I'm like, I think maybe I have something to offer. Like maybe I could give my life to making a little dent in this universe for God. You know, with his help, maybe I could play a little part in turning this world upside down. And I just made this decision, I'm not going to use whatever I've got for me. I'm going to use it to serve other people and try to do something good for God. And that is a moment that we need to come to, where we go from being like this, man, being a Christian is cool, it's selfish, to being like, I need to give this away. Peter Parker has a similar moment in the movie. So he's just very selfish. Everything about his new abilities is about him. What happens is there's this professor scientist guy who becomes a monstrous lizard. It's kind of weird. And he becomes evil, and he goes on this murderous rampage through the city. And Peter Parker realizes indirectly he's partially responsible for this. And so he decides, I have to stop him. I have to do what I can. And so he goes out to chase down this monstrous lizard evil guy. And along the way, not only does he try to stop him, but there's this kid on a bridge that's going to fall off and die. And Peter Parker, Spider-Man, is able to save him. And it's kind of like that day he realized something. That what he had been given was bigger than himself. It's like, this is not something to be selfish with. This is something I need to use to do good in this world. And it was this this transforming kind of moment in his life. And like I said, man, we all need to have this transformation where we go from, man, this is about me, to, man, I need to figure out how I can make the biggest difference I can in other people's lives and for God. You know, when I think about this kind of stage in this transformation, this evolution of a person who goes from not being a Christian to, I'm a Christian, but I don't get it, to like, oh, I kind of get it, and I like it, and it's for me, to like, they start growing, and they start thinking different, they start approaching things different, and their character starts to develop, and they start finding ways to serve other people, maybe really finding their niche, where they're like, I know how I can make the biggest difference with my life. I think about people like Kat Peterson. Kat Peterson started coming to our church about a year ago, and she was pretty new to it all, kind of down here in this journey, but man, she just jumped in, and over the last year, she has grown and just really changed, and she now serves in the children's ministry on Sunday mornings, and man, she loves those kids, and those kids love her, and she is making an eternal difference in their lives every week. And she is turning the world upside down through serving those kids, and who knows what those kids will do with their lives. Do you know why she's able to do that? It's because she's a superhero. As God supernaturally gifted her to do amazing things, just like he did with you. I think of people like Jesse Fisher. Jesse's an extrovert. She's just a people person. And immediately you get to know her, and you're like, and she loves people. And so she leads our host team on Monday nights. And so she tries to make new people feel welcome here. And Jesse is constantly like making pies and cookies and giving them to people who just moved in their apartment or who are sick or who are hungry or something. And she's almost every Monday night, she's giving somebody a ride back to their apartment or to a hotel they're staying at. If anybody needs a ride, she'll drive you tonight, I'm sure. And the thing is, and she's turning the world upside down. She's using who she is, the gifts that God's given her, her relational, personal ability, skills, to make a huge difference. Do you know why she can do that? She's a superhero. God supernaturally gifted her to do amazing things, just like he did with you. I think of Sam Rowe. Sam is the kind of the organizer of our band, and so every week for the band, he transposes music. I have no idea what that means, but he does that, and he organizes the band practices. He plays keyboard over here, and he's using simple things like musical ability and some experience with bands to turn the world upside down in his own little way. Do you know why he's able to do that? He's a superhero. God supernaturally gifted him to do amazing things, just like he did with you. Just like you do with you. And let me just say this. If you maybe have started into this transformation, you know, and you're starting to grow, but maybe you're like, I think I'm growing, but I don't feel like a superhero. Like I don't know that I'm making that big a difference with my life. maybe it's time for you to take that next step. Maybe up to this point, and it's okay. I mean, everybody goes through these stages, but maybe you've been in this stage where it's like, it's about me. Like, my life is about me, and the things that God gives me, it's about me. He answers prayers, and he helps me live life. And maybe you need to take this next step where you go, it's not about me. Everything God gave me, he gave me to serve other people. And maybe it's time for you to figure out, where do I serve? Where can I make the greatest difference? And our church is really committed, more maybe than any church I've been a part of or seen, to helping you do that. Like, we do classes that help you to figure out how God has uniquely wired you so that you can make the greatest difference with your life. We do these things we call first serves, and instead of just saying, you're serving in the nursery for the rest of your life. You're like, I hate kids. Instead of doing that, we say, hey, try a week in the nursery. And if you love it, great, but if you're like, I don't think so, then try a week on the host team. And if you're like, mm-hmm, great. If not, try a week back in the tank. Like, let's have you experiment a little bit so that you can find the thing that you're like, this is it. And it's not that the first day you're going to be like, I'm amazing at this. The first day you're probably going to be like, it's a little awkward. I've never done this before. It's a little weird, but I think I could do it. Like, I think with a little bit of practice, a little bit of training, I think this is something I could be really good at. And then you find your niche and you start serving and you start doing amazing things because God supernaturally equipped you to do those things. You are a superhero. And you know what? That's kind of the glorious side of this whole deal. You know, it's like as you grow, you get to do some things for God. And you get to see your life making a difference. And you're like, oh, like I'm a part of something bigger than myself. And I'm actually making a difference. And it's like, I get to do great and glorious and courageous and heroic things with my life. And that's the glorious side. But there is also a self-sacrificing side to being a superhero for God. In the movie, the theme of all the Spider-Man movies, including this one, is with great power comes great responsibility. With great power comes great responsibility. Being powerful, getting a supernatural, you know, in a movie, a superhero, or a Christian who's supernaturally gifted from God, man, it gives you great power, and so you get to do great and glorious things, but it also means great responsibility. It means that sometimes you have to say no to doing some things. Some bad things, but also some good things. In the movie, Peter Parker has this girl he likes. Her name is Gwen Stacy. But he likes her. He hopes that it'll become more than just a friendship. He doesn't just like her. He likes her, yeah. And so it's like he's hoping that someday maybe this will happen. And she has no idea that her friend Peter Parker is Spider-Man. But one night they have dinner together. They spend a lot of time together. And after dinner, she discovers that he is actually Spider-Man. It's like they spent so much time together now, like it can't be hidden anymore. Like she knows that he is Spider-Man, and she kisses him. And it's this moment where you're like, oh, Peter Parker is going to get the girl that he wanted to get the whole time. But what happens is Peter Parker tells her, we can't. We can only be friends. And that's kind of reinforced when her father, about to die, tells Peter Parker, who he knows is Spider-Man, he says, you cannot be with my daughter. Because they both realize that if Spider-Man has a relationship with a girl, man, that girl could be used against him. That girl could be put in danger. That girl might distract Spider-Man from really using his abilities to do everything he can to fight evil and save the world. And so he has to say no to a good thing. And as you grow as a Christian, you start to become so Christ-like that you go from this person who's really selfish to a person who becomes very selfless. And there are great and glorious things you get to do, but there are times where you have to say no to doing things. Sometimes it's bad things that may be difficult because you may really enjoy some of those bad things, but at least you know it's a bad thing. But sometimes it's actually a good thing you have to say no to. It may be that you're offered this new job and it's a lot more money. That's a good thing, but it also means a lot more travel. And maybe you're at a stage in your life where you're like, if I'm going to be the kind of father I need to be, I can't be away from my kids that much. Or man, I've committed, made some commitments to my church to serve in certain ways. I couldn't do it if I traveled that much. And so I have to say no to a good thing. It may be that you say no to alcohol because of the example you're trying to set for some of your friends. It may be that you start into this relationship with someone, and it seems like a good thing, but that person doesn't share your faith, and you start to realize, man, this relationship is having the effect of actually kind of pulling me away from my commitment to God and from really knowing God. And that's the greatest goal of my life now. Like what I want to do with my life is know God and love God and serve God. And this relationship is having the opposite effect on me. And I have to say no to this relationship, even though it feels good. See, there is a self-sacrificing part to the superhero deal. But I have to tell you this. When you get down to this stage in the process, it can be painful. Some of those things that you have to say no to, it can be painful. But really, it doesn't get any better than this. Like a person who has gotten that far, that they're willing to make sacrifices, that they're willing to be selfless, there is no end to the impact that that person can have for good and for God in this world. And there is no end to the impact they can have, because this person is really becoming Christ-like. And like we talked about with that graph on the screen, that's the goal. Let me show you a couple more verses. So in 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 18, the Bible says this. On the screen it says, we are being transformed. So notice that word transformed. Not in a second. It doesn't happen all at once. Transformed. It happens gradually over time, like we talked about. We're being transformed into his likeness, into Jesus' likeness. We're becoming more and more like Christ. Remember, that's where we're moving, with ever-increasing glory. So the idea is, man, the more I become like Jesus, the more glory that God gets. The more people go, man, there's something about this God that you serve because I see it in your life. And so over time, we're transformed into Christ's likeness, and then God gets more and more glory from our lives. Earlier, I showed you 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 10. Let me show you the next verse, verse 11. It says this. It says, if anyone speaks, he should do it as one speaking the very words of God. If anyone serves, he should do it with the strength God provides, so that in all things God may be praised through Jesus Christ. To him be the glory and the power forever and ever. Amen. Do you get it? What that's saying is, man, when you speak, it should be like you feel like, man, I'm so close to God, and I want to represent God. It's like I'm speaking the words of God to people. When I serve, it's like I wouldn't dare serve without the strength of God. Like I just rely on God to be my strength in serving others. You know, it's like it's a stage where it's like I've gotten close enough that I'm living a selfless life where I'm living for Jesus and for other people. And it's really powerful, because when that happens, when you get down there, it's almost like when other people spend time with you, people at work, people in your neighborhood, your family, when they spend enough time with you, they recognize who you are. When they spend enough time with you, it's like it can't be hidden anymore. They start to go, I know who you are. It's almost like when they're with you, there is a sense in which it's almost like they've been in the presence of God. Because they just get that from you. And man, that's the goal. Like, that's where we're supposed to be headed, and that is powerful. Like I said, there is no end to the impact that that person can have. So here's the deal. I recognize that tonight in this room, there are probably people who find themselves at every little different point in that spectrum. There's probably some of you who are like, man, I'm not, I haven't said yes yet. I'm here, I'm checking it out, I'm curious, but I don't consider myself a Christian yet. And we probably have some people who are new to this, and some people who are growing, and maybe we have a few people who are like, I've been doing this a long time, and I know I'm not there yet, but I'm going there. Like that's where I'm moving. And here's my challenge for you tonight is, wherever you are, keep moving. Wherever you are, take a next step. That's what it's all about. And here's a reality I don't think we recognize. You're always moving. Like, I think we kind of feel like, I'm standing here. You're always moving. The question is, which direction are you moving in? Right? We're always moving closer to God or further from God every day. We're always moving to become more like Jesus or a little bit less like. We're always moving. So move in the right direction, you know? And so I would encourage you, maybe you're here and you're like, I'm not there yet. I've never said yes. Maybe today's your day. Maybe some of you are thinking, what am I waiting for? Why haven't I said yes? We're going to have baptisms in 3 or 4 weeks out back. And I said, it's kind of the beginning of like this life with God. And maybe some of you are like, I need to do it. Like, what am I waiting for? And if that's you, there's a sign-up sheet. It's not necessarily saying, I will be baptized. If you want to, great. But it's more saying, like, contact me. I'm willing to talk about this. I have some questions. And so if you're interested, sign up. But maybe you're more in here and you're like, I am new to this. Or maybe you're further down the path. But what is the next step for you? Like, what is the one thing that you could do, like, tonight, this week, that you feel like would help you to take that next step down the path? And so I'm going to give you a couple of minutes to think about that. We do this every week where we kind of end the service with about 3 minutes or so of just kind of quiet time for you to engage with what you heard tonight, wrestle with it, and make a decision. What are you going to do with this? Okay, don't leave here just saying, it was good or it wasn't that good. Like, make a decision. What are you going to do with this? And so during this time, the band's going to play a song, so it's not like awkwardly silent in here, and we're also going to make communion available on each side of the room. There's bread and juice, which represent the body and blood of Christ, which remind us of the fact that Jesus was totally selfless and totally self-sacrificing and came down and had great power, but took on the responsibility of our sins by dying on a cross for us. And so it's a way of us thanking him and remembering what he did and kind of recommitting ourselves to this path of like, I want to be like that. So we're going to give you a couple minutes to do that. Band's going to play a song, and then we'll close out the service. Let me pray for you guys, and we'll do that. God, thank you for this chance we had to be here tonight. God, I want to thank you for the invitation you give us into relationship with you, that there is a standing offer of relationship where you're inviting each one of us, man, say yes. I love you. I want a relationship with you. I want to give Jesus to you. I want to make you 100% Christian through you saying yes. Say yes. God, maybe there's some people in this room tonight who need to say yes, who need to talk to somebody about that before they leave tonight. And God, I thank you also for your patience with us, because even when we say yes, it is a often awkward and frustrating journey to really start living it and figuring it out and becoming more like Jesus. And God, you have been so patient with me, because I've grown so slowly most of the time, and I'm so grateful for that. And God, thanks for your patience with all of us. God, I guess maybe my prayer is this, God, we're all searching. We're all looking for where we're supposed to be going in life, what we need in life. And God, I pray that maybe tonight you'd help us realize our pursuit is all found in you. Like, what we're looking for is you. And so would you help us to keep moving in the direction of you, to keep searching and pursuing you, because if we don't, we're always going to end up empty. God, we thank you for Jesus, and I pray all these things in his name. Amen.